Hello and welcome to the Miracle Moon podcast with me, Dr. Frankie Harrison, a clinical psychologist and Georgie Miracle Moon co-founder. As two NICU mums, we want you to know that you are not alone.
We'll be talking to professionals in the field, parents on their journeys after NICU, and exploring and validating common thoughts and feelings that NICU parents so often experience, but no one talks about.
So whether you're listening to this in NICU now, or if NICU has been a part of your past, just know that what you feel is valid, what you experienced is hard, and that there is a whole community of NICU parents here to support you. Come and join us. Hello and welcome to the Miracle Moon podcast. Today we have got Catriona here. She is the founder of The Smallest Things. It's a UK premature baby charity that supports families in their journey after neonatal care. It's looking to improve the long-term outcomes for children who are born prematurely. She also works as a paediatric occupational therapist and has over 20 years' experience of working with children, young people, and families. She founded The Smallest Things in September 2014, following the premature birth of both of her sons. So she volunteers her time for the charity, and she's passionate about making the world a better place for children born prematurely and their families. So it is lovely, lovely, lovely to have you here. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to be with you today.
I think the reason why I wanted you on is because of all of the amazing things that you are doing as a charity and all of the incredible, incredible things that you are doing for people after their NICU journeys. And I know we were just having a conversation before we started about how that journey continues after NICU. And I know that there are things that you are doing around kind of returning to work and around kind of supporting employees and things like supporting the kind of educational system and all of that. So we're kind of going to delve into that today, if that's all right. Yeah.
That sounds great. Yeah.
So do you want to start by just introducing yourself a little bit? Can you, whatever feels kind of comfortable for you, telling us a little bit about your journey and what it is that you do?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's probably best to start at the beginning for me. So over 12 years ago now, I was pregnant with my first child. I was working as an occupational therapist in a hospital. I'd worked in hospitals all my career up to that point. I'd worked on neonatal units. So when my GP said to me, you know, where do you want to be booked in to have your baby? My first response was, you know, King's College Hospital. I'd worked on the NICU there, and I sort of thought, if anything goes wrong, not really thinking anything would go wrong. But at 29 weeks, after a completely normal, uneventful pregnancy, my waters broke, and my first baby was born a few hours later and whisked away to neonatal care. Wow. And, you know, it just throws your world completely upside down into turmoil, very, very frightening. The one thing that I just had no idea about, though, was a doctor came to see me and said, look, you know, your baby's okay, but he'll be in hospital until around your due date. So that was sort of 2 months. And, you know, we sort of prepared ourselves for that. And then a support worker came and saw me by the cot side or by the incubator. My son was on a ventilator at the time. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, have you let work know? And I said, oh, yeah, I messaged my boss this morning. And she said, because, you know, your maternity leave has started. And I just couldn't quite compute how I just had a conversation with a consultant about we're going to spend 2 months in hospital. And then somebody's telling me that that's 2 months of your maternity leave. And I remember, and parents sort of said to us as we established the charity all the time, that families really feel robbed of that time. You go through a very, very difficult period, and even when you bring your baby home, there's sort of hurdles that you have to get over and difficulties, and you're just coming to terms with everything that's happened. And then you're sort of having to go back to work, and it just, for a long time afterwards, didn't sit right with me. And I thought of all the sort of the traumas and difficulties that we'd been through. And the biggest thing that would have helped us at that time would have been to have additional leave. So I founded the charity The Smallest Things with an aim to raise awareness of that journey that lasts, but also to campaign around extending parental leave rights for families whose babies are admitted to neonatal care.
Wow. Okay. That's incredible. That's incredible. And tell us now about where you've got with that.
So fast forward 12 years or so, we started by calling on government to increase parental leave for mums and dads whose babies were admitted to neonatal care or born prematurely. And the first thing the government sort of said was, you know, we've not heard of this problem before, or this hasn't really been raised with us. It's something we'll look into. But you know what? What we'll do is we'll put together some guidance for employers. So we supported the government in developing new ACAS guidelines for that. But we also set up as a charity our own Employer with Heart Charter, which outlines what companies and employers can do to support staff on the return of to work after their baby's been born prematurely. But we didn't want to stop there, because we sort of knew that, look, you know, if you have a good employer, they're probably going to support you anyway or do what they can. But not everybody has that luxury. So we continued campaigning, and really it was testament to the power of parents' voices sharing their stories that earlier this year the neonatal leave and pay bill passed Parliament, which will give families additional time before having to return back to work. I'm a bit cautious about celebrating that at the moment. Obviously, it's a massive achievement and a massive step forward for families who spend time in neonatal intensive care. But unfortunately, this new entitlement won't actually be available to families until probably 2025, because of how long the government have said it will take to implement. So while we're so pleased with all the campaigning and the success we've had, I sort of feel that it's doubly hard now for families than when I was in my situation, because for me, that was it. That was just how things were. Whereas if you're a family now in neonatal intensive care going through that tough time, you now know that government think you should have additional pay and leave, that should be statutory requirements, but actually you're not going to be able to claim that. So I think that's really hard, which is why we're continuing really to go out to organisations, employers, companies, to say, look, you know, these statutory requirements are going to be coming in a couple of years' time. Don't just make those changes now, go above and beyond now, so that we can support these families back into work. Some of the early research that we did, our smallest things after NICU report, highlighted that 1 in 10 mums just had to drop out of the workforce because they just weren't ready or able to go back to work. And parents tell us all the time that actually all they need is a little bit of extra time and they want to go back to work. It's not that they don't want to go back to work. So it's something that employers really can do to help staff whose babies are admitted to neonatal intensive care.
And what's been the response from that, from employers? Have you kind of had people who are kind of taking that on?
Yeah, we absolutely have. So, and it's a real range of employers as well. So, for example, you know, you'll have employers like Santander, to Sony Music, to smaller organisations. We've got a lot of NHS trusts that have signed up, police forces, universities across the UK. So more and more employers are making these changes. And what we find as well is if parents are in neonatal care or have had a baby born prematurely and they go and ask their employer, would you sign up to this charter? Would you allow additional leave? Then we've had some really lovely success stories. One mum told us that she got to see her baby's first steps, and that she wouldn't, if her employer hadn't signed up to the smallest things, Employer with Heart Charter, she would have missed out on that. So there's some really precious moments. I think parents say that they feel like they miss out on a lot of those developmental milestones, those early things that you would have if your pregnancy went and delivery went as planned at full term. So to be able to have those precious milestones is really important for families, and to be there to support their baby's early development.
It's absolutely huge. And I know I had a very similar experience to what you were talking about, and I didn't return to work. I was not ready. You know, I had my baby 2 months earlier, and I wonder whether if I'd have had that, you know, extra 2 months, I don't know, but then maybe Miracle Moon wouldn't be here.
There you go. Things change. So, yeah, like, you know, I think a lot of parents who've been through those early difficulties, you know, following birth or in the early years, do often change their employment or how they're working. One of the big things that we do ask employers is to be more flexible. So we know that if your baby's been admitted to neonatal care and born prematurely, you're much more likely for your baby to be readmitted to hospital. Mm-hmm. In one of our most recent surveys, I think more than half of parents said that their baby was readmitted to hospital after they'd been discharged home. And, you know, if you're a working parent and having to juggle your baby being in hospital, that's really hard. I know from my own experience, my baby born at 29 weeks was repeatedly admitted to hospital with respiratory difficulties every time he caught a cold or a virus. Yeah. And I got to the point where I was getting letters from my HR department asking me, well, could somebody else, a friend or another relative, be with your baby while he's in hospital so you can come back to work? Now, we were talking about a few days every couple of months where I would take annual leave. I wasn't taking unpaid leave or paid leave. This was coming out of my own holiday.
Yeah.
But even then I had the HR department suggesting that, you know, perhaps an aunt or an uncle could be with my baby while he was in intensive care. And you just think, how can you possibly make those suggestions? So it's really raising awareness, being really open and frank with employers and letting employers know that actually this will help. You know, you'll have staff returning in much better health and mental health to support them through that journey. Again, we know the impact on mental health for parents who've been through neonatal intensive care is huge, not just during their time when they're in hospital, but actually what we're discovering more and more is that comes out in the months after bringing their baby home from hospital. Our most recent piece of research that we did with families, I think it was nearly a quarter of parents were saying that they'd been diagnosed with PTSD after coming home with their baby, which having been through that experience myself and speaking with other families, and as you would know, you know, that's not really surprising what you've been through. So making sure that families have the time and staff have the time and support they need, then actually you're going to be much more productive and a better employee for your employer if you have that support up front.
So if there are people listening to this who are going, I want my employer to listen to this, I want them to be able to make those changes, what can you do as an employee, maybe if you're on maternity leave?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing I would say is visit our website at The Smallest Things. We've got information there and we've got information for families about how to ask their employer to make these changes. There's lots of information on there as well for the employer themselves, the really sort of simple steps that they can take to make these small changes. I think employers can sometimes be quite frightened when we say that sort of around 1 in 10 babies are admitted to neonatal care. That can sound like quite a high figure, but actually those babies who spend a long time in neonatal care, you know, more than a couple of weeks, are actually a really small proportion of those babies. And also those are the parents that need the most support. So actually it's a really small fraction of parents who need this additional support.
Okay. And generally, have you found that you've had stories of people who are going to their workplace and, you know, bringing up themselves and that being successful as
Absolutely. Well? Absolutely. Yeah. So we find that most employers make these changes after a member of staff have spoken to them about them and shared their own experience. What we tend to find is that it's in the years after a member of staff might have had their baby born prematurely, they'll go to their employer and say, can you make these changes? So while they're not benefiting themselves necessarily, they know that the other parents and members of staff who come after them will benefit. I think, again, it goes back to sort of what I spoke about, the power of the parent voice, particularly in our neonatal leave campaigning that we did. It really was about parents sharing their stories. Neonatal care is, I often describe it as quite a hidden world. It's not sort of, it's not somewhere that you would suddenly sort of stumble across by accident. And even if you know somebody who's had a baby born poorly or prematurely, they might not share exactly what goes on or what it's like to be in a neonatal intensive care unit environment. It's such an alien and often quite terrifying world to be in, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of worry, and to look after and care for a baby who's so fragile can really have a lasting impact. And so the first thing that we really wanted to do as a charity was to shine a light on that hidden world, so that, you know, the policy makers from the top of government to sort of the individual employers, whether that's a big organization or a small or medium-sized company, can understand why we're asking for these changes to be made.
And is there anything that anyone can do to try and help make the implementation happen quicker? Like, is there anything that people can be doing kind of in their local area with MPs or?
That's a really, really good question. So we have been campaigning hard, asking government, asking local MPs to really call for this to be brought forward and to be implemented sooner. I would encourage, we've got information again on our website, people can write to their local MPs suggesting that they write to the government ministers asking for this to be brought forward. To date, that's not been so successful, and I hate to say it, but I think we have got to a point where April 2025 is probably going to be the earliest this will be brought in. So the big thing that I would encourage people to do, even if they've not experienced this themselves, even if they don't know anybody else who's experienced this themselves, you can still ask your employer to make these changes now.
Okay.
The new statutory entitlements that will be coming in down the line again are fantastic, but still for a lot of families, you know, if you have a baby born at full term, statutory maternity and paternity leave entitlements don't go as far as some families need them to go anyway in terms of being able to afford childcare and the such like. So however an organisation or employer can support families who are particularly going through this tough period, and as soon as possible, that will make all the difference.
Have you found that people have been supportive of the paternity leave aspect as well?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Actually, when we set up the Employer with Heart Charter a good number of years ago, and at the time, actually, the charter, we called for at least 2 weeks for fathers and partners. We have recently updated our Employer with Heart Charter, though, so we now have the Employer with Heart Charter 2.0, which has parity between both parents, so that both parents would have the time between a baby's birth date and what should have been the baby's birth date.
Okay.
And so companies have been really sort of open to that, because, you know, you can't imagine any parent returning to work while their baby is in intensive care. And, you know, we've heard from families so often who have got into real financial difficulty because one or both parents have had to stop working. So particularly if you have other children, and trying to manage additional childcare and all those things, it's just so difficult for families. So absolutely, you know, I think most organisations now are very happy with that, and quite rightly so.
Yeah, absolutely. It was such a, I remember it, like, for me, my husband returning to work while I was in the neonatal unit, and it was obviously an impact for him in not being able to be there. But for me too, I'd just had a C-section, and now I couldn't get into the hospital. So I was kind of relying on other people to be able to give me lifts, and then kind of feeling like a little bit of a burden or feeling uncomfortable with that. And then having to experience, you know, maybe some of those first moments on my own there. And it's just, you know, there's layers of it, isn't there? And you just need both parents to be able to be there at that time.
Absolutely, and for all the reasons that you raised, very similarly. I remember my husband went back to work. I think his job at the time, he could take 2 weeks paternity leave, so he decided to take the first week after our son was born and save the second week for when our son came home from hospital. Our son was still on a ventilator when he went back to work, and milestones are very different when you talk about the neonatal unit. So I remember one of our big milestones was my son coming off his ventilator, and I was there when that happened, and I just really felt like a big part of me was missing, and it was because my husband wasn't there for that big moment.
Absolutely.
And I remember my husband used to sort of come home, hospital felt like home, would come to the hospital after a day at work. So he'd be there in his suit and, hoping to have a cuddle with our baby boy. And sometimes, for whatever reasons, if feeds had been changed or he'd moved cots or incubators or something had happened, he wouldn't be able to have a hold of our son at that time. And you think, gosh, I can't imagine anybody sitting at work all day, waiting and hoping to go and have a cuddle with your baby, and then getting to the hospital, not being able to do that. And it just, it's mind boggling. And, for us, that was 12 years ago. And I'm really hopeful. And I know in a lot of cases, that's really changing now, that both parents can be with their babies in neonatal care.
We are so thankful to Emma at Cover My Bubble for sponsoring our podcast. She asked us not to do an advert, but we so believe in what her company is doing that we really wanted to shout about it. Cover My Bubble is a family-run insurance company. Emma started the company after her daughter Lily spent time in NICU but sadly didn't make it home. Emma was impacted financially by the situation and wanted to support other people so that they don't have to go through the same thing.
Having both been through NICU and not having insurance, we saw the impact that NICU and illness can have on your family emotionally and financially. You can hear more all about the different types of insurance that Cover My Bubble offer on our episode with Emma, but also on their website, covermybubble.co.uk. We believe strongly in this company. They come from the heart and they're working to support families like ours. We know that so many of you will have been impacted emotionally by these issues, but by thinking about insurance, maybe some of the financial pressure could also be alleviated. It's absolutely incredible, the things you're doing. And I know you kind of said, don't celebrate it yet, but it absolutely does need celebrating, the stuff that you're doing, because this is life changing for the parents, for the baby as well. You know, it's
absolutely
huge. And getting the word out about neonatal care as well, you know?
Yeah. So that was the first thing, and really why The Smallest Things was created. I have to be honest, I never intended to set up a charity. Mm-hmm. It was set up as sort of a social media site and website, really just to raise awareness. I set it up on what would have been three years after my first son came home from hospital. And as I mentioned earlier, we were still being admitted to hospital. I was still having sort of flashbacks to our time in neonatal care, all those sort of things. And I thought, crikey, do you know what? Even our closest friends and family don't really know what we went through during that time. Our friends didn't really know what we were still going through. And I remember I would go to the health visitor or the GP, for example, and would be asked the same questions over and over again, or difficult questions that weren't really relevant if you've had a baby in neonatal care. And I thought, crikey, do you know what? If our friends and families don't really know what we've been through, because neonatal care is such a hidden world, how do I expect of the health professionals who I would be wanting to sort of pick me up and look after me at this time to know what we've been through? So it really was set up as a way to raise awareness and to tell our story and the story of thousands of families who go through it every year. And back then that wasn't really spoken about. And I remember, it's funny, some of the things that stick with you. One mum getting in touch with me saying, this happened to us 15 years ago. I thought it was just me that felt like that. And I think that's the biggest thing that The Smallest Things is about. It's bringing that community together. It's saying that as families, we all have very different stories, but we've all been through something similar. And it's making sure that those families have the support, quite rightly, while they're in the neonatal unit, but that they have the support in their journey after coming home. And at The Smallest Things, we're run entirely by parents who've been through that experience. Mm-hmm. We've all been there. We really do get it. And we know that that journey lasts long after, for a lot of families, long after coming home from hospital.
We have very similar missions with that. I think the power in being able to reduce some of that loneliness, some of that mm-hmm. shame around some of maybe the things that you feel like you're feeling or thinking, and it just being you is it's so powerful. So it, you know, again, doing some really great stuff. Thank and I know that the other part that I wanted to talk to you about today was talking about the things that you are doing with schools.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us a little bit about what it is that you do with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, this is sort of going back to that lasting journey for mm-hmm. families. You know, the research tells us that children born prematurely are more likely, it doesn't mean they will, but are more likely or more at risk of having special educational needs and requiring some additional support in school. Mm-hmm. When we spoke with families and through sort of our research and surveys that we did, the one thing that we really heard loud and clear from families was that they knew that their children needed a bit more support, yeah. but they really felt that the schools didn't really understand what needs their children might have.
Okay.
And there had, at this time, there was a brilliant online resource, training resource put together by the PRISM research team, which we spoke with them and said, look, you know, it's fantastic. We've seen this resource, but we want more teachers to know about this training tool and access it, because that's what families were telling us that they needed. So we set up what's called our PremAware award scheme. So it's a scheme for schools where trainers teachers can undertake just a couple of hours of free training to okay. really understand more about some of the very specific learning needs a child born prematurely may have. But the other key thing is also that asking schools to change their registration forms. So once they know which children might be coming to school that year and the questions that they send home to parents, we ask them to ask parents about any birth history or preterm birth history, because it's all very well and good teachers being trained in how to support children born prematurely, but if you don't know which children in your class may have been born prematurely, then actually that training isn't going to be that helpful to mm. you. Yeah. The really nice thing about it is it does a couple of things. It obviously is giving that training and support to teachers to be able to help and recognise the needs of some children born prematurely. But also, again, it's going back to that parent voice. Parents really feel like it gives them a tool, something that they can go to schools with to advocate for their yes. child. Certainly parents will say to us that they sometimes feel like their concerns are being dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we do hear a lot about is parents are reassured. And people will say, oh, don't worry, you know, they were born early, so they'll catch up.
Yeah.
And actually, we know that children born prematurely, you know, while they do catch up to a large extent, if there are those specific learning needs there, those learning needs need to be met, and a child can't just sort of catch up in terms of specific learning needs. So that's yeah. a really important part of work that we're doing at the moment. Mm-hmm. We've got a hugely ambitious aim for all UK schools to become PremAware by 2030. So it's hugely ambitious, but it's really needed. You know, study after study that you see, children born prematurely do have sort of lower attainment levels than children born or their peers born at full term. So it's really, you know, it goes back to that journey, doesn't it? It's supporting mm. families when you come home from the neonatal unit, but it's looking at those longer term outcomes mm. for children born prematurely as they grow up into becoming adults. So that's a big focus for us at the moment.
When you're talking about specific learning needs that children might have, what is it that people might be needing to be aware of?
That's a really good question. So what the research tells us is that children born prematurely may struggle more. The big thing they particularly struggle with is maths.
Okay.
But also things like slower processing speed, working memory difficulties. Children born prematurely can sometimes display difficulties with attention. And I think we need to be careful, because sometimes you'll talk about children having attention difficulties. And mm. the first thing people tend to think of is children who have ADHD. So children who have attention, but also sort of more hyperactive yeah. difficulties as well. Whereas children born prematurely tend only to have the sort of inattentive, the attention difficulties. So actually they're not presenting perhaps to the teachers as a child who needs additional support in school. Mm-hmm. They tend to have quite subtle difficulties in lots of different areas mm-hmm. of their learning. But when you put all those bits together, that can have a big impact on their attainment and how they do in school.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you, because I know that it's something that I've noticed a lot, but whether there are more sensory needs, and if that's something that you go into, and I know with your OT background, that might
I was going to say, certainly with my occupational therapy background, absolutely. And parents tell us all the time that sort of, you know, sensory needs are very much in there for children born preterm and prematurely and have had that neonatal experience. In my day job as a children's occupational therapist, I always ask parents about birth history because you can pick up a lot of information based on sort of around the birth history and what's happened at birth that may have those difficulties going forward, particularly with sensory needs. Really interestingly, we did an online event for parents actually around the educational needs of children born prematurely. And we have a number of ambassadors who promote our PrevAware Award across the UK. And one of our ambassadors, who's in her 20s now, was born prematurely. Okay. And she spoke about her experiences at school, and a lot of the things she spoke about were some of those sensory needs, being, you know, struggling with sort of school uniform, the sort of the sensation to her tactile system. She was talking about she didn't like the feeling of the wind going past her ears and things like that, and sort of her sensitivities to various sensory input. And it was fascinating listening to somebody speak sort of all these years after being at school about sort of how she felt her prematurity and premature birth had impacted.
So I guess, you know, this is allowing teachers to be able to go, here are all these needs that might be specific to children who are born prematurely, and being able to identify children in their classes who are premature, and then going, so what support do they need as a result of that? That is more
absolutely
specific.
And the PRISM training that's available has got some really good practical tips and advice in terms of how to meet some of those needs. We always have to be really careful and point out that not all children born prematurely will have these needs. But we know that risk does increase mm-hmm. with preterm birth, particularly those born very preterm. But more and more research is telling us that even those born just a little bit early, so, you know, even those sort of born 34 weeks mm-hmm. and up, are more likely than those babies born at term to have special educational needs.
Okay.
And I think to date, that hasn't necessarily been recognised. Mm-hmm. The feedback that we've had from teachers has been brilliant to the training and the award. Particularly special educational needs coordinators will come to us and say, we've managed to identify a child who we didn't know was born prematurely. We couldn't quite work out why they were struggling in a particular area. And they said, you know, after saying that we were signing up to your award, the parent went, oh, by the way, perhaps this is useful information. And off the back of that, they've been able to put in additional support. So, you know, we hear lots of stories like that. So it's making a difference. It's having an impact. But as I say, we've got a really ambitious goal for all UK schools by 2030. And you know, we really are pushing forward on that.
Yeah. I love that, and I absolutely hope that for you. And if there's anything that we can do to support you with that, we absolutely will do.
My
son's going to school next year, and it's something that we're starting to look around schools, and it's something that I will be having as a question.
Yeah.
And I guess it is just that, isn't it? It's starting it with a question of, are you aware of the impact on premature babies? Can I send you some information?
Yeah, absolutely. It really is. And, you know, on our website, we've got lots of information that parents can share with their schools. The award is available to nursery and early years settings as well.
Okay.
The training is relevant, but we are also supporting the universities, the researchers, to develop an additional module to the training specific to early years as well, which will hopefully be available next year. So it really is that journey right through the educational system for families.
That's brilliant. So parents have got the resource of your website and all of the information that you've got on there so that they can be pointing people in the right direction. Teachers have got the kind of course that they can take, the webinar that they can take as well.
Yeah, so absolutely. So teachers, the training is available for them freely online. We do have a lot of families and parents who actually go through the training themselves and say they find it really useful. The webinar that we did really recently earlier this year for parents around the educational needs of children born preterm is also, there's a recording of that available on our website as well. So there's lots of information for families.
Wonderful. I'm going to be linking all of this in the show notes so that people can know where to go.
Brilliant.
Is there anything else that you are doing at the moment that you feel would be helpful to talk about, that you feel like people need to know about, the things that you are doing or things that you have learned or anything like that?
I think sort of the big thing, but we've been speaking about that all the way through, is really that lasting journey for families and raising awareness that it's not just the time you spend in the neonatal unit, particularly for families whose babies are born prematurely. It is a lasting journey, from the impact on parents' mental health, things like the impact on just family finances. Having a baby in hospital is expensive. All the additional costs, travel costs, car park costs, childcare costs, all of that adds to the stress and sort of turmoil to families during this time. And to the, you know, like yourself, you know, children going through nursery and starting school, it is that journey that continues. And as a charity, we're very much there to support families through it and through the work that we do, be that our employer with Heart Charter, asking employers to make those changes, or through our Prem Aware Award in schools. It is trying to support families on that journey and improve outcomes and make the world a better place for those kids who were born early.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's just this narrative, and I know that it's something that's been said to me and something that has been said to so many people in the community around, but they're home now, you know, or that bit of being over it. And I've shared before my health visitor saying to me about 6 weeks after being home, are you over that yet? And just being like, no.
How would you be? Very similar. I remember a family member saying to me a couple of days after we came home, thank goodness all that's behind you.
Yes.
And I think families will say that actually when you're in it, you're very much on autopilot and there's a lot of people around you, a lot of support. And it's when you come home, and I think from the research that we're doing and the families that we're speaking to, that's coming through loud and clear, that actually it's in those months and years after coming home from hospital that families need that support. We're very much going to be calling for more support for families in terms of mental health support after neonatal care, but also, I mean, you've raised it yourself, additional training for health visitors. So, you know, we have our Prem Aware Award scheme for schools, but also we'd like something similar for health visiting and community teams as well. Amazing. So that everybody who should and would be supporting families after neonatal intensive care can be ready to support those families when they come home.
So incredibly needed. So much change that is just, you know, just so needed. So thank you for everything that you are doing. Is there anything else that you feel like you want to say to people, or kind of any advice that you would give to people before we wrap up?
The last thing I would say is just visit our website. All the information is on there. We've got a lot of parent stories on there as well, and we know how comforting it can be to actually read somebody else's story, because often it tallies with your own story. And as we've said, actually, you know, it's then you don't feel quite so alone in your journey. So just for families to visit our website for more information.
Wonderful. Lovely. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. We'll put all of the information about this on your show notes, and we'll continue kind of shouting about you from our social media as well, because you are doing incredible things. So thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Frankie.
No worries.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode. We'd be so grateful if you could rate, comment, or subscribe if you found it helpful. We'd love to see you again, so come and join our community on Instagram at Miracle Moon UK.
You can check out our other resources and services on our website, www.miraclemoon.co.uk. We can't wait to see you there.